Welcome to an edition of Anthony T's Horror Show. I'm Anthony T, and this edition is just me for the entire show, as I will be talking about my time at Monster Man's Outdoor Little Mall of Horror, which took place May 22nd and 23rd. I went the Saturday. I'll be talking about that next segment. Then afterwards, I'll be going into my AEW Double or Nothing review. You'll get all my thoughts on All Elite Wrestling's Double or Nothing pay-per-view. Then, to wrap up this episode, What's Anthony T Watching is back. And I'll be talking about The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It. It's the third film in The Conjuring series, and is one of my most anticipated horror films of the year. So you'll be getting my thoughts on that film. But first, the news. And I start off with news on a reboot that looks like it's now going to happen. After all these years of rumors and talk about a Toxic Avenger remake, it's now closer than it's ever been before for it to start shooting. That's right, they've cast the villain for the upcoming Toxic Avenger reboot, and is none other than Kevin Bacon. Yes, that Kevin Bacon that was in Tremors, that Kevin Bacon that was in Wild Things, that Kevin Bacon that was in Friday the 13th. The original, not the remake, everyone. And yes, it's the same Kevin Bacon that was in 1984. Film Footloose, and 1992 film A Few Good Men. This guy has done some classic films, and now he's doing the Toxic Avenger reboot. As news got out that he will be playing the villain in the upcoming Toxic Avenger reboot, this was a surprise. Seriously, I was expecting they'd probably get some character actor, or maybe Peter Dinklage would be the villain of the film. But this is a very interesting casting choice, as I never would have expected Kevin Bacon to be involved in this film. But anything can happen in Hollywood. And yes, sometimes it does. This film is probably going to either be very good or very bad, because this film has the talent. I'll give it that. They're casting good actors in this film. It's going to be very interesting to see how this film is once it's completed, as I cannot wait to see this film, as this will probably be on my most anticipated list whenever they stop filming this film and finishing it. I'm probably looking at probably sometime 2022 or longer. It depends when they decide to stop filming. Because, like I said, I will not fully believe that this film is happening until this film stops filming. But with all these casting announcements, it looks like it's almost full steam ahead on the Toxic Avenger reboot. In other horror news, file this next story as WTF. Because that's what the thought I had when I first heard this story. Now, Gaspar Noé, who people might know from Climax a couple of years ago, which is one of my favorite films of 2019, has been secretly making a movie. And it's going to premiere at the Cannes Film Festival, which runs July 6th through the 17th in France. He made a film called Vortex with a log line, "Life is a short party that will soon be forgotten." Well, this casting news was not forgotten, as I literally had to double check the story twice on BloodyDisgusting.com. Because I couldn't believe it at first. Seriously, I could not believe that this film had this person starring in the film. Because he is a legendary Italian filmmaker. That's right, I'm talking about Dario Argento in an acting role. This is no joke, everyone. Because at first, I thought it was a joke, seriously. I literally had to reread the article to be sure that this was not a joke, but it isn't. As Dario Argento will be starring in Gaspar Noé's new film, Vortex? I don't know what to say here. I really don't. But then again, this is a Gaspar Noé film, and things can get so surreal. Things can be so out of place, but it always ends up working at the end. More like a David Lynch film. So, I'm very interested in his next film now because of Dario Argento acting in this film. I don't know how good it'll be, but it's going to be a very interesting film once it comes here to the U.S. Because I really want to see this film now. Because Dario Argento is in this film, plus the fact that it's another Gaspar Noé film. Let's just hope this isn't a 3-hour epic like Enter the Void. And more like a 90-minute film like Climax. As I get a feeling, this is going to be a lot different from Climax. Because Climax, you could probably say, is Gaspar Noé's most commercial film. And that's taking it lightly because all of his films are so surreal and so graphic that Climax was the least graphic out of all of his films in his filmography. I don't know what he plans with Vortex, but this is going to be a very interesting film no matter what, because it stars legendary Italian horror director Dario Argento. For better or for worse, I will be seeing this film. As this is a very interesting casting choice, but then again, it's a Gaspar Noé film. So, you never know what to expect in a Gaspar Noé film. In wrestling news, WWE released a bunch of stars on June 2nd, including Braun Strowman. This was a major shocker that Braun Strowman was released from WWE. The reason it came down to it was money. And I will go more into that theory on what's going on in a minute. Let me just run down all the other releases. They've also released Aleister Black. Why was he on SmackDown costing Big E the Intercontinental Championship 2 weeks before he's released? I just don't get that one neither. That came out of left field because that was another surprising name that was released. Which was just downright shocking because I was not expecting him to get released. If he was going to get released, he would have been released a long time ago. For him to get released after debuting a new character 2 weeks before was very shocking. And I just don't get that one neither, because as Aleister Black is a very good wrestler, he has a great finisher with that spinning heel kick. But I don't get why WWE doesn't understand that Aleister Black could have been special for this company. Instead, they make the same decision again when someone looks great, but decides, we don't think he's going to be a good fit. I just don't get this company. Seriously, that's another major head-scratcher. They also released Murphy, a very talented in-ring worker. Never gave him a chance to shine. They released Lana, Ruby Riott, which she never got a chance to shine in this company. She was great on the indie scene as Heidi Lovelace, and she's a very good worker. I've seen her a couple times live, too, so she can work. She never got a chance in this company. Let's face it. I don't think she ever got a fair chance to show what she is made of. And she is a very talented performer. I really hope she ends up in AEW or Impact Wrestling, as she could be doing some good stuff over there instead of WWE. And they also released Santana Garrett, which is another good worker, as she's had some very good matches in the Shine promotion, but was never used in WWE. She was, like, I think, called up, then never used, which makes no sense. Now, back to the Braun Strowman thing, and why I think they continue to release people. I have a feeling that the WWE is going to be up for sale soon. I just can't see why they're getting rid of all of this talent and really cutting big salaries here. Because Braun Strowman was making very good money from what I heard. And for him to be cut, which was very surprising. But then again, they had no idea what to do with him. Like, half of the roster, they don't know what to do with these people. And that was the problem when they signed all these people up a couple years ago. They signed them up so they wouldn't go to AEW, and they had literally no plans for them. Why I think these releases are continuing to happen, as this is the second batch of wrestlers that have been cut from WWE this year, is the fact that this company will probably be on sale soon. Because I have a feeling within the next year or two, Vince McMahon is going to sell WWE. And it's going to be very interesting, to say the least. Because this company, over the last couple of years, have flat out been awful at times. Especially now with Raw and SmackDown. I cannot even watch Raw or SmackDown. It's like Vince McMahon is not interested in the company. Or he's interested in pushing people that fans don't like. And when that happens, people tune off. And that's why WWE's been hurting. Because they're releasing wrestlers that people like. They're also putting on the same matches week in, week out on television. Which does no favors for the viewers and for the wrestlers in the ring. If they're wrestling the same person week in, week out, or every other 2-3 weeks, it's doing nothing for their character. And when that happens, well, people turn off. And that's what's been happening lately. And they're wondering why they're having trouble with ticket sales right now. That's maybe a little bit due to the hesitancy of people wanting to go to large arenas for events. But some of it, I think, definitely has to do with the way WWE has been handling their television the last 6 to 8 months. As it's just flat out awful. And when you have an awful product, nobody's going to pay money to see an awful product. Moving on, the National Wrestling Alliance held a pay-per-view on June 6th on Fight TV called When Our Shadows Fall. The results from that pay-per-view card are La Rebellion of Mecha Wolf and Besta 666 defeated The End, Slice Boogie and Marshall Rocket, and the team of Sal Ronaldo and Sam Rudo in a four-way tag team match, which was a very good match and probably the best match on the whole pay-per-view card. Tyrus defeated The Pope. Taryn Terrell and Kylie Rae defeated Thunder Rosa and Melina. JTG defeated Fred Rosser. Aaron Stevens and JR Kratos defeated the War Kings in Strictly Business to retain the NWA World Tag Team titles. Camille defeated Serena Deeb to become the NWA Women's Champion. And in the main event, Nick Aldis defeated Trevor Murdoch by disqualification to retain the 10 pounds of gold, aka the NWA World's Heavyweight Championship. Overall, the pay-per-view was good. It was a step down from their last one, especially with the main event, because I don't like main events that end in DQ, as I just don't like it. Seriously, it's 2021, not 1985. People want definitive winners and losers. I just don't like that booking decision to end that pay-per-view with a disqualification, as it doesn't work with today's wrestling. Seriously, it just doesn't work with today's wrestling. In other National Wrestling Alliance news, they've announced that they're bringing wrestling back to St. Louis and the Chase Plaza Hotel, as they will be there for four nights in August, starting August 28th with an all-women's pay-per-view executive produced by Mickey James. On August 29th will be the NWA 73rd anniversary show. Then August 30th and 31st are both TV tapings for NWA Power. That's going to be very interesting to see the NWA actually run shows out of Atlanta, Georgia for once. It's going to be interesting to see if they can draw outside of that area. St. Louis is a wrestling town, as there was over 1,000 episodes of Wrestling at the Chase that aired in St. Louis homes from May 1959 until September 1983. So St. Louis has a great wrestling history. And I can see why Billy Corgan decided to take his show on the road to St. Louis and to the Chase Park Plaza Hotel. As this is going to be interesting to see if the National Wrestling Alliance can draw outside of Atlanta, Georgia. And it's going to be a huge test to see if that happens over those 4 days. And with that, that's the news. Every day there's a family struggling with hospital bills to care for their sick child who is fighting an illness. There's a woman who is fighting breast cancer and is having trouble making ends meet while paying for their treatment. And there are burn victims that are going through treatments to heal their deep wounds. There is a charity in the horror community that helps these people. Scares That Care is an organization that helps families deal with the bills for their child. They help women get the treatment they need to fight breast cancer, and they help people who are dealing with severe burns get the help they need to heal. Scares That Care is a 100% volunteer organization and 501c3 nonprofit charity that is dedicated to helping these people in fighting real monsters. To find out more information or to donate to Scares That Care, you can go to www.scaresthatcare.org. Every donation helps Scares That Care fight real monsters. Besides Anthony T's horror show, you can also listen to these other fine podcasts on the Doc Discussions Network. Doc Discussions, hosted by Phil Perrone and Michael Darwin. You Know Nothing, Jon Snow, a Game of Thrones podcast. Bullets, Brothels, and Bots, a Westworld podcast. Halloween Boutique, Psychotronic Reviews. And Searching for American Gods. You can find Doc Discussions on the web at www.docdiscussions.com. And Doc Discussions is also available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. Welcome back. Well, recently, yours truly started to go back to conventions again, as I attended Monster Mania's Outdoor Little Mall of Horrors event that took place in Oaks, Pennsylvania, May 22nd and 23rd. I went on the 22nd, and man, it was great to finally go out to a convention, because I haven't been to one convention since November 2019. That is when Rhode Island Comic Con had their annual event. That was a very good convention. Was excited for the 2020 convention season. Then COVID happened and pretty much took away all of 2020. And I won't lie, I did not expect this soon to be going back to conventions. I was literally expecting to go back maybe around Rhode Island Comic Con time this year, but everything worked itself out very quickly. Got the vaccine, so I can go back to what I enjoyed doing best, going to conventions, and specifically horror conventions. As this has been the first horror convention I went to since October 2019 when Rock and Shock had their last show, as that convention's no more. So, I decided to go with a couple friends all the way to Oaks, Pennsylvania. That's right, from the great state of Rhode Island to Pennsylvania. It was a long trip, trust me. As yours truly got to see some nice parts of rural Pennsylvania on the way there. As me and my friends went to the Oak Expo Center in Oaks, Pennsylvania. For Monster Mania's Outdoor Little Mall of Horrors event. Now, this was a very good convention, I have to admit. This was the second Monster Mania type event that I've been to. I didn't have a good time the first time, but we're going to stay with the positives here, as I had a very fun time in Oaks, Pennsylvania. As this was a very good convention. I had a good time. It was hot out there, I will not lie. It was very hot on a Saturday afternoon, wind blowing. Oh no, this was a very organized convention. I liked the layout of it, as I really had a good time walking around each of the aisles. Met a couple of people that I haven't seen in like what feels like forever. As let's face it, it's been a while since I've been to a convention. But at least I hooked up with a couple of people that I've seen at previous cons, which was very cool. I also got a couple of autographs, as if you've seen the social media page, Anthony T's Horror and Wrestling Show on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Please subscribe and like. You can see me in my It face mask, trying to follow the guidelines of the event with masks being required. As I got to meet Jean Ann Taylor from the first Friday the 13th film. The original Friday the 13th. Not the remake. And I also got to meet Stacy Nelkin from Halloween 3 Season of the Witch. And now, if you're wondering why I am not saying that I met Tom Atkins as well, I already met Tom Atkins a couple years before at the defunct Scarecon New England. When I could remember, there was like two or three people in line before I met him. This con, different story. Seriously. Words do not describe how shocked I was to see his line so long. I was expecting Doug Bradley to have the longest line out of all the celebrities there. But to see Tom Atkins' line, and I'm going to try to describe the setting here. You had Tom Atkins, Adriana Barbeau, and Stacy Nelkin on the right-hand side. His line was from his line all the way past the line for Adriana, all the way past the line for Stacy, all the way out to where near the DJ was. That's how big the line for Tom Atkins was. I have to give it to him. He's a very nice guy. I've met him. I've actually shared an elevator with him when I was at the first Scarecon New England. He is a very nice guy. I'm very happy that a lot of people came out to see him, because he's truly one of the best celeb guests I've met. And I met a lot. Quite frankly, he's like top 5, top 10 overall celeb guests I've met. He's a very nice guy. I was kind of happy that he still gets the appreciation for his films like Night of the Creeps, Halloween 3, Maniac Cop, Escape from New York, and more. Because he's a very down-to-earth person, very nice guy. I'm very happy he got a lot of people wanting to see him that day. The layout was very good. I had a great time walking around the convention. Even though it was very hot, I liked how they had water available for sale if you needed it, because I needed one, because this weather in Pennsylvania was very hot, beginning of the summer, so it's kind of hard to get into the fact that I'm probably going to be sweating a lot, walking around all these tables. Also got to meet some nice vendors there. Met a couple of people I knew from previous cons, like Damian Leone, as he and Fuzz on the Lens Productions was there promoting Terrifier 2 and selling some merchandise. If you've seen the video that I recently put up on YouTube, the recent vlogcast, I picked up a Terrifier shirt. Also got to meet Tom from Deadly Grounds Coffee. Very good coffee. Definitely check out Deadly Grounds Coffee if you're going to look for any horror-themed coffee. It's the best. And this is coming from a person that just drinks iced coffee. I usually don't drink hot coffee, but I've sampled some of their stuff over the years, and I really love their pumpkin spice flavor. I picked up a couple of those at the con as well to hold me over to CT Horror Fest, as I know they're usually going to vend there, and pick up some other stuff, some movies as well. I picked up Loon from Scream Team Releasing, and more, which you can find out if you go over to Anthony T's Horror and Wrestling YouTube and watch the June 4th vlogcast on the channel. Just type Anthony T's Horror and Wrestling Show, and I'll take you to that page. Please subscribe. I would love to have 100 subscribers so yours truly can get an actual custom URL, because it's hard to promote a channel when you can't have a custom URL. Like, you have a custom at Anthony T's Horror and Wrestling. But back to the convention. I really had a very good time. It felt great to go to a convention again, as it's been, was like over a year. I was just sitting there doing nothing, waiting for next year, and hoping conventions would start up. As this was fun, I would definitely go back to another Monster Mania show, as I really had a great time at this Monster Mania show, as everything felt organized and it was just fun. It was definitely a great way to get back into going to conventions. I can't wait to go to another convention very soon, as it feels great to get back on the convention scene, meeting my friends, and having a great time, like I did over at Monster Mania's Outdoor Little Mall of Horror.
Hey guys, this is Steven Christina. I'm the founder, owner, creator, and host of Super Retro Throwback Reviews. Are you looking for the best movie reviews, music reviews, video game reviews, and Comic-Con coverage all around? Well then, look no further. Definitely check out Super Retro Throwback Reviews on YouTube and our new audio podcast, the new and improved Super Retro Throwback Reviews Audio Files version 2.0 on the following media distributors: Podbean, Google Play, Stitcher, SoundCloud, iTunes, and Spotify.
Class is over, John! Time for something new and improved!
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
This is Carrie.
This is Billy.
This is Mr. Bo.
And we are from A Podcast from Beneath. You can catch us every Wednesday wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
Welcome back to Anthony T's Horror and Wrestling Show. If you're expecting a guest this episode, I hate to tell you, there is no guest this episode, because yours truly will be talking about the recent AEW Double or Nothing pay-per-view that took place in Jacksonville, Florida on Sunday, May 30th. This was a great show. I really had a very fun time watching this show, as I'm about ready to talk about the negatives and positives of this show. But first, let me quickly run down the results for Double or Nothing. The card kicked off on the buy-in where the National Wrestling Alliance Women's Championship was being defended. Champion Serena Deebs retained the title by defeating Rio in a very good pre-show opener. Then the main card kicked off with Hangman Adam Page beating Brian Cage. The Young Bucks defeating Jon Moxley and Eddie Kingston for the AEW Tag Team Championship. In the Casino Battle Royale, Jungle Boy surprisingly wins this match as he eliminated Christian Cage last to win the Battle Royale. In the Battle Royale, the Joker was none other than Leo Rush. Overall, that match was probably the best Casino Battle Royale they've had yet. And I also really like the fact that they gave Jungle Boy the win, because when I was thinking about this match, I was thinking this was definitely going to be Christian Cage's match to win, because they've been focusing him the most when it came to the Casino Battle Royale. It seemed like all the stories are around him, so I figured he'd probably win the match. But surprisingly, they decided to go with Jungle Boy, which I think is a great move for AEW. You have to put young stars over veterans, and they did that with this Battle Royal, with Jungle Boy eliminating Christian Cage to win the match. It's a very good match. Then Cody Rhodes defeated Anthony Ogogo in probably the worst match on the card. I'll get more into that in just a bit. The TNT title match saw Miro defend the championship against Lance Archer. Dr. Britt Baker became the new AEW Women's Champion as she defeated Hikaru Shida in a very good match. Then Sting and Darby Allin defeated Ethan Page and Scorpio Sky. Sting was so over in this match. It looked like he never missed a beat, as this was his first live match in about 5 years. Then in the co-main event, Kenny Omega defended the AEW Championship by defeating Orange Cassidy and Pac. And the main event was Stadium Stampede 2, in which the Inner Circle defeated the Pinnacle in a very good match that started at TIAA Bank Field and ended at Daly's Place. I love the fact that this actually went into the live crowd, which really, I think, made the match kind of special, because literally, it pretty much ends the cinematic matches that we all had during the pandemic era of wrestling. I'll talk more about that in a bit. Let's move on to negatives and positives for Double or Nothing. Start off with the negatives. As quite frankly, literally, there's only like one negative on this whole pay-per-view, as everything else on this card was either good or great. The only thing I did not like about this pay-per-view was the Cody Rhodes-Anthony Ogogo match. I really think that match really felt like it was just there. When you have a match where it's just there, it's just you're not caring about the action. It moves at a pace where you just become so uninterested in whatever story they're telling in the ring. Everything really in that match felt flat. I didn't care what was going on in the ring. This really also like felt like the typical U.S. versus the foreign heel. That usually does not work in pro wrestling. You can sometimes overcome it if you have really good in-ring work, but I really did not like the in-ring work in this match at all. First of all, Anthony Ogogo's been at wrestling for like 2 years, so he's kind of new to wrestling, which really hindered this match. I wish Cody would have carried him more. Plus the fact that I just was not into this whole feud at all, as I really didn't care what was going on with their story. I didn't care about the in-ring work, as I thought the in-ring work was just average at best. And with AEW, you expect better than average. So that did not help. Plus, I thought there was no personality to either of the wrestlers that were wrestling in that match, which really hindered it for me and really made me felt bored. When you get bored watching a wrestling match, you have to have either good in-ring work, an interesting story in the ring, or have some moment that gets you awake and gets you invested. This match had none of that. And it really was pretty much the only bad match on this card. As this match really exposed Anthony Ogogo as someone who's new to wrestling. Because he really, I felt, didn't show any charisma at all. And you kind of need to show charisma if you're going to be a heel. You want me to hate you. Instead, I was just sitting there, not caring about him. It would have been nice if Cody would have carried more of this match, because he's new. I hope he improves. Seriously. I think there's talent there. He definitely has the character, but I think he needs to show more charisma for Ogogo to be successful here. Plus, I thought the ending of the match was abrupt. Cody didn't hit the crossroads. He hit the vertebrae, which is like a secondary finisher for him. It didn't have that impact of a big win. Never mind the fact that he didn't get Anthony Ogogo over. The fact that he beat Anthony Ogogo with his second finisher does not help Ogogo at all going forward. Because Ogogo can be an effective heel. He talks good. But I don't see any charisma. I don't see anything when he's actually in the ring wrestling. He needs to really improve on that. And I really thought Cody could have helped him along this match. Like in the same way he helped Shaq in his tag match. When they encountered each other. Because I see promise in Anthony Ogogo as a wrestler. He can talk. He's got the character down. It's just that he needs to translate it in the ring while wrestling. As he looked like a rookie in the ring. And this is a major pay-per-view. And can't have someone on the card looking wrestling like a rookie. You can get away with it if it's a celebrity match. But Anthony Ogogo is on the official AEW roster. And this is a pay-per-view. You expect something exciting. Especially with him and Cody Rhodes. Because Anthony Ogogo is an international superstar. But his in-ring work was not good. He looked like a rookie. And that's what really hurt this match. I wish Cody could have carried him a little more. As he's still new to the business. But I can see good things from him. He has a good character, like I said before. He just needs to translate it when he's wrestling in the ring. And in this match, I did not see that. As I thought he felt flat. It's one thing to do a 2-minute match on AEW Doc where you can hide your weaknesses. It's another thing to do a 10-minute match on pay-per-view. Or TV. And I really think Anthony Ogogo needs some more ring time before going back on a pay-per-view card. He's got the talent as a talker. He needs to translate it in his in-ring work. Let's move on to the positives. And when I talk about positives, I mean favorite matches on the card. The first match I really liked was the Young Bucks versus John Moxley and Eddie Kingston. Loved how Eddie Kingston and John Moxley came out to Wild Thing. I was not a fan at first. Maybe because they used the original Wild Thing. And it does not get you excited for anything. If you listen to the original version of Wild Thing, it just doesn't get you amped up. This new version of Wild Thing, which I believe is the same version that was used in Major League, it's a very good version. It gets you amped up and everything. But I still miss John Moxley's old music. I loved that entrance better. But at least they improved on the Wild Thing song and used the X cover of the song instead of the original. Because the original, quite frankly, does not get you amped up for a wrestling match. If you ever listen to the original version of Wild Thing, you'll see why it does not get you amped up. But back to the match between the Young Bucks versus Moxley and Kingston. This was a very good match. I loved this match a lot. I was surprised that this match was the second match on the pay-per-view, because I figured it'd be like at least the third match from the top. But it was a very interesting choice to put this match second on the card. Maybe they wanted to continue to build up the hot crowd, as the crowd was excited for pretty much anything on this show. Because the opening match between Adam Page and Brian Cage really got the fans excited. So this is why I said this was interesting that they put this second. The crowd was hot for this match from start to finish. And I was very interested in this from the beginning on. One of the things that I like about AEW is they know how to keep the momentum going. And they did a great job keeping the momentum going from the opening match to this match. As this match started off quick, there was literally no in-ring introductions, which really set the tone for this match. I like it when matches just start out of nowhere and just becomes intense from minute one. And all four wrestlers in this match did a great job keeping the intensity going throughout the entire match. As the different styles of the Young Bucks and Kingston and Moxley really gelled well, I was very invested in every minute of this match. There's like literally nothing wrong with this match. It really does a very good job keeping your interest. The wrestling in the ring was good. The brawling was good. And also, I thought the Young Bucks were great in this match, as their new heel persona lately has really made them more of a better tag team. And that's kind of hard to say, because they're literally the best tag team in wrestling. I have to say, this heel run is so far better than when they were heels in Bullet Club. Because everything they do a great job in making sure you hate them. It also helps the fact that Don Callis is managing them as well. But Young Bucks really always show personality in their matches, whether they're faces or heels. It's no different here. I really enjoyed the fact that those four really went all out for at least a good 15-20 minutes, which has some good brawling. There's also some really good moves, including Moxley and Kingston hitting a doomsday device, while Moxley had the Young Bucks shoes that they stole on a recent episode of Dynamite in their hands when delivering that clothesline. That was a really good moment. And also, I really think the ending of this match is very good as well, as the Young Bucks hit their finisher four times on Moxley to retain the AEW Tag Team titles. It was a very good match. Literally could be best match on the show if there weren't two other really great matches on this card, because this card was just very good. I'll talk about it at the end. In this tag team match and this whole Young Bucks heel run so far has been nothing but excellent. My next positive for this pay-per-view was the Stadium Stampede match, between the Inner Circle and the Pinnacle. I thought this match was just crazy from the start. Just like the previous Stadium Stampede match last year, everything had a very crazy tone to it. It really had a lot of really good moments. My favorite moment of this match is where Jericho throws MJF into the office of Jacksonville Jaguars head coach Urban Meyer. Yes, that did happen. And that was a riot. It was hilarious. With inside linebacker and assistant coach Charlie Strong handing Chris Jericho a couple of footballs to throw at MJF. If that wasn't surreal enough, Jericho then requests Meyer to give him his laptop. Meyer obliges and hits MJF with the laptop. That is just such a surreal moment. Then afterwards, MJF ends up sat down in a chair. Chris Jericho rolls the chair all the way to the players' film room and flinging MJF out of the chair, over the railing, and through a table. Jericho says afterwards, have a great season. And Urban Meyer says, holy bleep. That was just so funny and so unreal. But then again, the Cons also own the Jacksonville Jaguars. Wardlow and Hager were fighting in a meat locker. Then later in the match, they were in an equipment area. Then we got really the most creepiest moment of the match when Sammy Guevara stumbles onto an area in the stadium where the steel chairs are kept. And you know who's there. The chairman, Sean Spears, banging a chair, continuing their brawl from the beginning of the match. Then, all of a sudden, TIAA Bankfield was hosting a dance party in the middle of a pay-per-view, nonetheless. That was just weird, really. Apparently, the dance party was being hosted by a mystery DJ. And Proud and Powerful and FTR started to beat up the patrons at the dance party. The two teams then drank before fighting. Then we found out who was the mystery DJ. It was none other than Mexican wrestling legend Conan, who has history with Proud and Powerful, as Proud and Powerful were part of LAX and Impact Wrestling, and Conan was their manager in Impact Wrestling. That was a really cool moment, as that's another cameo I didn't expect. You had really like three cameos in this match, which I think made it different from the previous Stadium Stampede, as I can't remember a cameo in the middle of the match. I could be wrong, but that was one of the reasons that made this Stadium Stampede different. And it was smart for AEW to make it different from the first one. And another thing that really made it different from the first one, as this match went into Daly's place live with a full crowd. That was, I think, a special moment. Because literally, over the last past year, we've been seeing cinematic matches due to the pandemic and everything. It was nice to see one of those cinematic matches cross over to live television. As MJF and Jericho would continue fighting all over the place, all the way to the live crowd at Daly's place, where Jericho got the upper hand over MJF. Sean Spears was making his way to Daly's place before Sammy Guevara, riding on a golf cart, catches up to him and nails him, and then the two proceed to go to the ring as this match ended Inside Daly's place in the ring. Sean Spears starts hitting Sammy Guevara with a chair. The finish comes when Sammy curb stomped Spears into the chair that was set up between the turnbuckles. Then Sammy hit the 630 for the pin. All the members of the Inner Circle come out as the crowd sings Judas to end the pay-per-view. The booking of this match was very good. I like the fact that there were some callbacks from the original Stadium Stampede, like the whole golf cart thing. This time Sammy riding the golf cart instead of being chased by a golf cart. I like the fact that it was cameos, which made it different. And I also love the fact that this match ended inside Daly's place. I loved how they transitioned from the cinematic part of the match to the live part of the match. It was very good. And I kind of liked the ending of this match too. As in AEW, you have to put over new stars. Because if you had Jericho getting the pin in this match, you weren't putting anybody over. The ending of this match really helped put over Sammy Guevara. And I really think that was the right choice to end this match with him and Sean Spears inside the ring. As this was a very fun match. I don't know if this is better than the first Stadium Stampede, as the first one was very crazy and it ended spectacularly, while this one pretty much ended in the wrestling ring. But it's really nice to see the transition from the cinematic part to the live crowd. I hope this serves as the last cinematic match in All Elite Wrestling. It was fine during the pandemic, but you're not going to be able to do it with a live crowd, because it would be very tough to keep their interest. But just to have that moment and the fact that it just ends live, which really, I think, made this a very different match from the previous Stadium Stampede. This would have been my favorite match on this card if it wasn't for the match before it. The best match on this pay-per-view card, and really the best positive on this card, was the triple threat match for the AEW World title, as Kenny Omega took on Pac and Orange Cassidy. This is one of those matches where I'm probably going to be looking back at the end of this year. This match was awesome from start to finish. I loved the layout of this match. As this match started slow, then picks up. In the last 5-10 minutes, this match is so chaotic that it really made this match very good. A lot of near falls. There were some really good spots in this match. The psychology in this match was very good. The in-ring work was excellent. The crowd was really into this match. I think probably the most out of all the matches on the whole pay-per-view. As this is probably one of the best triple threat matches I've ever seen. It has to be up there with some of the best. The crowd is really behind Orange Cassidy in this match. This match featured a lot of finishers from Orange Cassidy and Pac, but to no avail. It was a crazy match. At one point, Omega took both the Brutalizer submission move, then took a beach break from Cassidy, as this was just non-stop action, intense. This is one of those matches where you literally cannot take your eyes off of. As this is one of those matches where I just enjoyed from start to finish. It's just great. I love it when matches have really good storytelling, good psychology in the ring. It really makes the match special. And this had that special kind of quality to it. I'll go to say this is probably the best match I've seen all year so far. This was just crazy. The crowd really was into this match. The wrestling was just awesome. There was this one great moment in the match where the crowd really erupted after Don Callis pulled the referee out of the ring, costing Orange Cassidy the championship. After hitting Pac with an orange punch, the crowd literally went, F you, Don. It was, like, hilarious. It's like, this is why I love watching wrestling. I love watching wrestling for the intense action, the atmosphere. And this is literally, by far, one of AEW's greatest matches. You have to say, it is by far one of AEW's greatest matches. I put it up there with Cody versus Dustin Rhodes as the best AEW match. Because this was just insanity from the get-go. The match ends when Pac has Orange Cassidy in the brutalizer. Omega tries to break the move but cannot get Pac to release the hold. So what does he do? He double axe handles the referee to basically make sure that there is no stoppage at all. Then it's just more chaos as Omega then proceeds to hit Pac with first the Impact World Championship, then the AAA Mega Championship, then the TNA Heavyweight Championship, and finally, to cap it all off, hits Pac with the AEW World Championship. Then gets hit with an orange punch by Orange Cassidy. Another referee runs into the ring for a two count. Kenny Omega rolls Cassidy up with a crucifix pin for the three count. And Kenny Omega still is the AEW World Heavyweight Champion. This was an excellent match. From top to bottom, I think all three guys' stock is risen from this match. Kenny Omega is probably the best wrestler in the world right now. His matches are considerably great. Every time you're watching a Kenny Omega match, it's just great. Orange Cassidy, who would have thought Orange Cassidy would be in a position like this? When he first joined the company, I literally thought he's just going to be there as a comedy act. But never in my wildest dreams he would be an upper tier main event player in AEW. But this guy is so over. It's amazing. Because on the indies he was mostly comedy. But I like how he's improved leaps and bounds to get over the comedy stigma and become a little more serious, which really allows the evolution of his character. And it really has paid off, as he's literally one of the most over people in AEW today. And Pac, I can see literally great things for him in the next 6 months to a year. I know he hasn't been in AEW long this year due to the pandemic. But every time he's been on AEW programming, he's been very good in the ring. He's really a guy that I could probably see at least getting maybe the TNT title in the future, maybe the heavyweight title. Because he's a great high flyer, a great wrestler, and he's one of those guys that WWE dropped the ball on when they had him. Seriously, this guy can do anything. I hope this continues his rise to the top of the card, because literally, I really could see Pac as a main eventer in AEW. He's just that great. He's already great in an upper mid-card role. I could see him going to the top of the card eventually, because he's just that good in the ring. And he can cut promos. This was definitely a great match. I would say this is probably the match of the year so far. I don't know if there's going to be anything that tops this match. It'll be kind of hard, literally, because this was just intense action from start to finish. I enjoyed this match a lot. The Double or Nothing pay-per-view was just excellent. With the exception of Rhodes versus Agogo, this pay-per-view was top-notch. And I truly believe it's going to be hard to beat for pay-per-view of the year. Because this just was a great card, which had 9 out of the 10 matches either be good or great. And when you get that type of COD where almost everything on the COD works, you got yourself a great pay-per-view. As it's going to be hard to top this pay-per-view this year. I'll be honest, as Double or Nothing is right now the best pay-per-view I've seen all year. And it's probably going to be very hard to knock that off. Because this show was almost perfect. With the exception of one match, this show was a very good pay-per-view. And this is the reason why I'm so big on AEW. They provide great wrestling, great entertainment, and they really pull out all the stops for their shows. Definitely check out Double or Nothing 2021, as this was an excellent show. You'll find Anthony T's horror and wrestling show on these social media platforms. On Facebook, Instagram, and the Slasher app at Anthony T's Horror and Wrestling. And on Twitter at Anthony T's Horror. You'll find new episodes on DarkDiscussions.com, major podcast providers, and YouTube. Welcome back on Anthony T's Horror and Wrestling Show YouTube. I recently did a vlogcast where I talked about the various pickups I picked up, including stuff that I picked up over at the Monster Mania show back in late May. Definitely check that out. I will also be doing a new video soon highlighting the pickups that I picked up during both the halfway, the Black Friday sale, and Family Video sale. Both VS sales. That's right, two sales for one label back to back. I'll be doing a video on that soon. So check that out between episodes, as that's going to be one long video. I can guarantee you that. As I picked a bunch of stuff up, plus I'll have reviews of certain films I've seen already that I picked up during that sale. It's just so hard to fathom two sales from one label back to back. But that's what it is. Two sales, one label, back to back. And I went to both sales. So that video should be up soon. Coming up next episode, I haven't decided what I'm doing yet. I could be leaning towards a rant. So be on the lookout for that. Also, What's Anthony T Watching is returning. If you like this podcast, don't forget to subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and Spotify. And you can also listen to this podcast on DocDiscussions.com. I'm Anthony T. I want to thank you for listening to this episode. Have a good day. Support indie horror and indie wrestling.